Hey, this is Kyle Clark. You're listening to the podcast version of Next. Catch us live weeknights at 6 Mountain Time on 9 News and streaming live same time on 9 News Plus. Email me anytime at next@9news.com.
A promise may be kept in Colorado 21 years after it was made. That's how long ago voters first approved to pay a new sales tax to build the train to Longmont. What train to Longmont? Exactly. It's been a promise not delivered on for decades. And for years, we have tracked it here on this program, ever since RTD said that it could be the year 2050 by the time it finished the train to Longmont. Well, that estimate's been chipped down to about 3,000 days from now. And you know what? Tonight, our Marshall Zellinger can report it could be a mere 999.
You're looking at RTD's train to Longmont. You can't see it because it still doesn't exist. 21 years after voters approved a fast-track sales tax that was supposed to help pay for a train from Denver to Longmont.
The original fast-tracks project was always overpromised.
Lisa Kaufman, senior strategic advisor to the governor, is leading the team negotiating a deal that will help complete the train to Longmont.
Really what my job became is, what can we deliver with the resources that exist without going back to voters and asking for additional tax revenue?
In 2024, RTD estimated it would cost $650 million to finish the line, with a schedule of three trains from Longmont to Denver in the morning and three trains from Denver to Longmont in the afternoon.
We're looking at a total one-time investment around $330 million for the first three round trips.
How is Kaufman's cost cut in half? Joint service. The train would make three round trips from Denver to Longmont as part of a joint service with Front Range Passenger Rail, the newly named Colorado Connector, or COCO, that would continue on to Fort Collins.
At those numbers, we have enough existing resources between the state, RTD, and Front Range Passenger Rail to be able to deliver the service without asking voters for any additional tax revenue.
Platforms would look basic: a canopy, a cover, and parking nearby.
Everything you would see for a typical nice bus stop, essentially.
Anything fancier would require voters along the COCO route to approve a sales tax question on the ballot as soon as November, which could also add more round trips. A state law signed in 2024 calls for COCO to begin by January 1st, 2029, which means we can maybe say a train to Longmont could be ready 999 days from today.
You can, and I think that would be a good way to keep people accountable and focused on finally delivering train service.
Lisa Kaufman is presenting the money part of this to RTD right now. Joint service needs approval by several boards: RTD's board, Front Range Passenger Rail, CDOT, and a couple other state agencies with more acronyms. If they all agree, Longmont will finally get a train in just a shade under 25 years.
Hey, total. Hey, that's not, so nobody smokes anymore, but RTD is that friend that's always bumming cigarettes and has never once had their own cigarettes, but they're always asking other people. They have a pot of money, right, that they've been collecting over the years from people?
Yeah, they still collect Fast Tracks dollars, and there's about $192 million in a savings account strictly for Fast Tracks dollars. RTD's portion of this would be $190 million.
Okay.
There are other parts of Fast Tracks that still haven't been built. I can hear people like beyond Westminster saying, what about us? And
yeah.
But look, Boulder and Longmont may have its path. 999, what are the odds? 999.
How about that? Everybody keep eating right, exercise, and we may live to see that train. Marshall, thank you. The head of RTD, we learned today, is leaving. Like many RTD riders, her experience has not been great, and she's not likely to return. CEO and general manager Deborah Johnson told staff today that she's out when her contract expires next year. Johnson says RTD's elected board offered her a new contract extension, but she'll step down for personal and professional reasons. Personal reasons, of course, are her business. The professional reasons could be that the transit agency has been on the struggle bus her whole 6 years there, after ridership went south during the pandemic. Their budget's $200 million and change short. But no CEO ever leaves with a staff memo that says, yikes, good luck, everyone. So her goodbye said RTD, quote, has a strong foundation for success and is well prepared for its next leader to continue the current trajectory of success. I recently referred to painful state budget cuts as nut-cutting time down on the ranch. Some of you appreciated that. A viewer named Debbie wrote in to say that that was deeply offensive. So I will not say it again. Debbie has ruined it for everyone. Use whatever descriptor you like. Taking $1.5 billion out of the state budget is going to involve slicing some sensitive areas. The House began debate today on a nearly $47 billion budget for next fiscal year. State's Joint Budget Committee has already proposed steep cuts to Medicaid and rejected cost of living increases for state employees. They've snipped here and there as well, thousands of dollars in grant programs for sexual education, training for future educators, mental health support for law enforcement. Democrats say Colorado is in this fix because of the state's taxpayer bill of rights, which caps state tax revenue collection. Republicans say Democrats have mismanaged the budget and are spending too much on social programs.
Only so much money we can spend under Tabor. It means that we cannot do everything that Coloradans want us to do. Every decision is a trade-off. Every dollar for one area is a dollar less in another.
We can't afford to do everything in this state. We certainly can't afford to do everything for everyone. We've got to decide at some point who's deserving of other people's money, and it can't be everyone in every situation.
Republicans, who are in the minority, offered up dozens of budget amendments today. Almost all were rejected. They did get some small wins. They moved some money away from the governor's mansion maintenance fund. They're instead giving it to the Department of Military and Veteran Affairs. Aurora city leaders are reevaluating their relationship with the ICE detention facility in town. The newly elected Progressive City Council is postponing an agreement that deals with how Aurora police officers respond when the feds call for help. When two men escaped the ICE detention facility in Aurora during a power outage last year, which seems like it shouldn't happen, the feds were quick to blame Aurora police for dragging their feet and not helping fast enough with the search. The detainees were both found within a couple of days, but that's caused some lasting tension between APD and the feds. Aurora police say a new agreement with the detention facility would eliminate confusion and clearly outline the city's responsibility for responding to incidents there. City leaders say the agreement gives Aurora Police the authority to respond to criminal incidents inside the facility while ensuring that their officers are not doing federal immigration enforcement.
The MOU, as it's written right now, gives discretion to APD, the chiefs and the commander, that the watch commander that's out that night, to do the assessment of the risk and say, look, this is not one of those that we're gonna put a whole bunch of officers over there. We'll go out and take a report, but we're not going to be out there for 6 hours looking for somebody that may be only on civil detainment. Now, if it's a
violent— Some critics at this week's council meeting argued that the agreement is still formalizing a partnership between local police and ICE, and they questioned whether ICE is going to abide by it. City Council said they want some more time to hear from the public on this. They've delayed a vote on the agreement for 2 weeks. You like green grass? How much? Put a dollar figure on it. Actually, you know what? Our Evan Krugel will do it for us.
Water in Denver will be at a premium this year. And if you plan to use as much as you normally do, you can expect to pay a premium for it.
The more water that you use, the more you're going to pay. And the more water that you use on the higher end, that the more that this drought pricing is going to impact you.
Today, Denver Water announced new fees for outdoor water use as they look to combat drought conditions and limited access to water.
Not everybody's bill is going to go sky high with drought pricing, but it's still there to signal the importance of valuing water in a drought, which is what we're in right now.
Denver Water spokesperson Jimmy Luthy says the average Denver homeowner uses around 105,000 gallons of water every year. Customers who reduce that by 20% will see little impact on their bills. But people who use the average amount or more could pay more than $200 in fees this year based on a new tier system. That top end is a far cry from the cost of a new lawn if it dies. But Jimmy says they're confident that won't be a problem.
So 2 days per week under the normal watering rules should be sufficient to keep lawns in good shape.
I agree. I totally agree with Denver Water. Watering 2 days a week is not gonna kill your bluegrass lawn.
Plant expert Lisa Mason says just because your lawn looks a bit brown this year doesn't mean it will need to be replaced.
You know, keeping your turf grass alive, it might not look as lush and green this year, but it will, if you can continue watering, you know, those 2 days a week, like it'll be fine and hopefully will bounce back.
We don't want lawns to die. We definitely don't want trees to die. But at the same time, in a drought, sacrifices do have to be made, and 20% reduction in water use is what we need customers to help us meet this year.
Now, those restrictions officially begin on May 1st and last through the end of April, all the way April of next year. Kyle.
Question, Evan Krugel. How will they know if I'm a water cheater or just a really good yardsman?
It's a really good question, Kyle. Essentially, they'll take your January, February, and March average, put those together. That's what they assume you're using indoors all year long, because a lot of people aren't using a ton of water outdoors during those months. And then essentially anything above that, they'll assume that's what you're using outdoors this summer, and that's what you'll see those extra fees on.
That's fascinating. Little do they know, well, until now, their guy ran the hose on stuff this winter because it was so dry, right? I bet you there are a number of people
that's going to help
that.
Your average, Kyle.
Well, I'll need all the help I can get. Evan Krugel, thank you.
You bet.
There's a longtime nonprofit in Broomfield that works with folks with intellectual and developmental disabilities. And one thing that they do, of many, is incredibly important. They help to prepare people to someday live independently. That's why this week's Word of Thanks Microgiving campaign supports the nonprofit Friends of Broomfield. And here's why their mission is so vitally important these days. 24% of Coloradans with intellectual or developmental disabilities live with a caregiver who is age 65 or older. Those neighbors of ours need to prepare for a different living arrangement in the future. Friends of Broomfield is part of a new affordable housing development called The Grove at Cottonwood, where there are units set aside for people with developmental disabilities. Friends of Broomfield runs an independent living academy, classes teaching life skills to prepare people to live on their own. And we can support that transformational work. Scan the QR code on your screen or text the word thanks to 303-871-1491. We'll shoot you the link to donate. You know the deal. Even $5 helps. You've done $18 million worth of giving that way. And I'll never ask you to give if I don't. So I'll match the first 50 donations of $5 to get us rolling. 7,500 of you have signed up to make a monthly donation to the Word of Thanks Fund. You pick an amount, and we split it evenly among all the nonprofits that we support each month. And we expect that to add about $40,000 to this month's weekly campaigns, each and every one. It is a story that is all too familiar to Colorado's cycling community, another cyclist facing a long recovery after being hit by a driver.
She was just doing something that she loved and enjoyed, and now that's all changed.
We'll have a word about the ripple effects across an entire community. And wouldn't you know, there are people out there who are faking Palisade peaches and Olathe sweet corn. Have you no shame? That's next. File this under problems we didn't know we had. State legislators say there is counterfeit Colorado produce out there. Imposter Palisade peaches, cheating chilies, not really from Pueblo. So there's a new bipartisan law that will prohibit sellers from labeling produce as being grown in Colorado or using the Colorado Proud logo unless it was actually grown here and authorized by the Department of Agriculture. The bill's sponsors say produce like Rocky Ford melons and Olathe sweet corn are so popular there are sketch artists out there trying to imitate the products and trick consumers. Under the new law, mislabeling those products would be a deceptive trade practice punishable by up to $20,000 in fines. But lest you think you can sue over the underground market for potatoes, not really from the San Luis Valley, technically all potatoes are an underground market, the law does not give private individuals the right to sue over imposter produce.
I've got real water coming for the real farmers and ranchers of Colorado producing the real produce we've all come to love. And next Tuesday is really the day I'm kind of excited about. But tonight, it's all about elevated fire danger. It's been warm in spite of the cloud cover. It's been windy. We woke up to two fires burning north and west of Denver. Things are calming down a little bit after another day with highs above average. Upper 60s, low 70s, even 80s on the map today. And even with the cloud cover out there, temperatures are still very mild. And we're seeing the snow melting quicker than we might like. Winds out of the west and northwest will simmer down tonight, but it won't be entirely calm with additional wind development in the foothill areas tomorrow. But tomorrow, it's ahead of a weak wave coming in that will mean a 30% chance of showers for Denver. There's a parent low off to the west that's going to send a series of waves of moisture into the state. Not a lot to show you on radar today, but at least there's something, and we'll have more by this time tomorrow night. As a matter of fact, check it out. We have isolated showers tonight, a sunny day to start tomorrow, and then this time tomorrow night, look at this. We might have a brief downpour around Castle Rock, the Palmer Divide, South Metro area, out toward the Byers area. And so, comfortable conditions for you tonight with decreasing wind. 7-day forecast above average for Thursday, Friday, and Saturday with a chance for rain. But all eyes on Tuesday. Fertilize the yard, throw out the wildflower seeds. I think we could get up to an inch of water on Tuesday, and some of that rain could mix with snow.
yet another cyclist injured while trying to share the road in Colorado. An entire community tells us they're feeling the pain. Next. Kristen Wade's life changed on the morning of March 25th. She was cycling to work when she was hit by a person driving a car. Today we talked with her coworkers at Feedback Sports in Golden about how that crash has hurt an entire community.
Yeah, this is Kristen's office here. There's one of her bikes.
Oh gosh, Kristen loves cycling.
To know her is to know she's really a cyclist, and it's a major part of her life.
She's a great person. She has the biggest heart. She's so kind and empathetic.
Caring, enthusiastic, focused, motivated person.
She's a really sweet young lady.
Super kind-hearted and, of course, loves cycling. It's the reason that she lives here in Colorado and in Golden.
She was commuting to work. She was in the crosswalk with the right-of-way and was hit by a driver.
Fortunately, she wasn't killed, but she was seriously injured.
She's been in the hospital since it happened. It's been 2 weeks.
It's going to be a huge impact to her life. The recovery is going to be really long.
She's going to have a long road ahead.
The cycling community is a small community, and she's so involved in so many things, and she has so many friends that it impacts a lot of people.
She's an advocate for cycling. She participates in a variety of rides around town, all different kinds of disciplines of cycling.
Yeah, I think her family obviously is the inner circle that is the most impacted. Clearly, we feel that here. We're an extended family here.
I think that there's just a hole created. There certainly is within our office, and we've just got a gap now in personality.
As a coworker, she's not here at the office, and we miss her. As a friend, she's not here, and I miss her.
Her position will be here when she comes back.
I mean, her job is here when she's ready for it.
One small incident can have months or maybe years of impact.
And she was just doing something that she loved and enjoyed, and now that's all changed.
Kristen was moved to Craig Hospital today, where she will begin her long-term recovery for the severe traumatic brain injury that she suffered in the crash. She's in very good hands at Craig. Wish her all the best that long road ahead. Meryl is here with feedback. What are the people talking about tonight?
Nut cutting.
Next. There is a coming crisis in Colorado. A quarter of Coloradans with intellectual and developmental disabilities live with an aging caregiver who's 65 years old or older. The nonprofit Friends of Broomfield runs an independent living academy, among many other wonderful programs they have, classes that help prepare people to live on their own. Scan the QR code on your screen or text the word thanks to 303-871-1491 to join me and a bunch of others in giving to support their work. There's new affordable housing in that part of town that's going to include some units for the IDD community, and Friends of Broomfield is helping our neighbors get ready to live there to succeed in a new stage of their independence. Lots of viewer feedback tonight about the phrase nut cutting, and the viewer named Debbie who wrote in very offended about it. Steven says, Kyle, you always get the one who has to be offended on real world stuff. However, those of us who ranch know and understand and appreciate it. Thanks for being real. This note from Debbie, I did a double take, not that Debbie. Many of my friends know that Next is my favorite television show. I can't have them thinking it was this Debbie who was offended by nut cutting. As someone who grew up on a livestock farm, I found it to be quite appropriate. So let us set the record straight. The Debbie who was offended by the phrase nut cutting and got it banned from Next is not the Debbie you know. See you next time.
Thanks for listening to the podcast version of Next. Catch us live weeknights at 6 Mountain Time on 9 News, streaming live same time on 9 News Plus. Email me anytime at next@9news.com. Next producer is Mallory Harris. Our digital producer is Marilyn Moore. Our visual editor is Jeff Sartell. Our reporters include Marshall Zellinger, Mark Salinger, Angeline McCall, and Evan Kruel. Misty Montano is 9 News' digital director. I'm Kyle Clark. I'll see you next time.